Hello and welcome to the Freelance Bookkeeper blog. My name is Gabrielle Fontaine and this is the TFB Spotlight. And normally in this segment, it's when I interview fellow bookkeepers. However, we have something different today and I think you're going to like it. It's a real treat. We have my special guest, Martin Bissett, who you can see right there, so can't hide him yet. But he's not a bookkeeper, so this is going to be a little bit different than what we normally do. But Martin has been in the accounting industry for over 18 years, and he works internationally in the UK, the US, and Europe, and works with accounting firms from sole practitioners all the way up to top global firms in the accounting world. And Martin is the founder of Upward Spiral Partnership, also known as USP, which I love that name. And he's located in the United Kingdom. He's a professional trainer and coach who works with accounting firms to help them grow by getting high quality type A clients. So that's something that all of us, including bookkeepers, are always looking for, better quality clients. And then Martin regularly speaks at industry conferences, including Account Techs in London, and now we know Account Techs is here in the US as well, and he at Scaling New Heights in the US. So Martin has been around us, but he's primarily worked with accountants, but is now branching out and working a little more with us as bookkeepers, so I'm thrilled. And you might be wondering, okay, so why do I have Martin here as a guest on a bookkeeper blog? Well, I met Martin through a mutual friend, Mark Wickersham, and it's just an interesting story for us as well. I want to point out for networking, because Martin heard about me because Mark was talking about me, and then he reached out to me through LinkedIn. We had a Skype call. We also then connected through Facebook, and Martin regularly comes to Philadelphia, where I'm located, to work with clients. And I happened to see a post that he put on Facebook, and I could tell from the post that he was in Philadelphia. So then I connected with him, we met in person, and we really hit it off. I saw that we have so many of the same core values in how we deal with bookkeepers and accountants, and I just knew I had to have Martin come on the blog and step into the TFB spotlight for us. So Martin, thank you so much for being willing to do this.
Thank you, Gabrielle. I'm never going to receive an introduction like that again, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I think we're going to be hearing a lot more from you not in the not-too-distant future. So first of all, just so everybody can get to know you better, tell us, how did you start working with accounting firms since you're not an accountant?
I asked myself that question many times. the background is that in the late 90s, there was a huge sea change in the way that you could market your accounting firm. And this led to an organization that I had yet to have any involvement with start to adopt approach towards, a niche approach or a niche approach towards. And so they started as a marketing consulting firm to start acting for accounting firms who now had the hunger to take advantage of legislatory changes and start marketing themselves to their potential clients. At this time, I was in the software world. And I was out there working with the likes of the Walt Disney Organization and getting Christmas cards from Mickey Mouse. It was a good life. But over time, what happened was that the ethics very much went out of the IT industry, whereas originally it was a very creatively based industry. It became very commercialized. It became price-driven. It became the bottom fell out of it, basically. Mm. And so I was no longer comfortable in the environment. I was no longer prepared to do what everyone else was doing to win clients and to hit their targets. So back in the glory days of CD-ROM, I can just hear now listeners going, oh, let's Google that. The CD-ROM days, directories, when they first moved from Yellow Pages, went onto CD, and you would put your CD in what's known as the cup holder and put it in your 80 MIDI stack case. Oh, now I've lost the audience entirely, and
not us old folk who remember that.
The problem is that rule of references are old now. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. That feels like yesterday. But decided I wanted to have a very much a change of career from the IT world, and the process kind of went like this. Well, what do I want to do ultimately? I want to help people. Mm-hmm. What do I know anything about in order to help people? Business, I guess. Mm-hmm. Okay, how would you help people and still be able to make a career out of it? Consultancy. Okay, what do I know about consultancy? Zero. Right, start from there. And I put in this little business directory disk and I typed in management consulting firms in my hometown. I wasn't working in my hometown at that time. And the first name that came up, I called. Back when you use phones for speaking to other human beings, and I called. The person who answered said, how can I help you? And I said, could I speak to the managing director, please? That's our United Kingdom version of the CEO. And they said, what is the call regarding? And I said that the call is regarding employment. And they said, oh, is this about the vacant marketing manager's position? I said, it is now. And that was the starting point. They said, what's your name, please? And I said, Martin Bissett. And they said, they went through this, the managing director, and they said, I've got Malcolm Bishop for you. You know, and that's kind of where it all began. So several interviews later, in I came to the organization, and this was my childhood apprenticeship, if you will. In becoming, because I was in my, I was younger than I am now at that point, and I started to learn about a marketplace I had absolutely zero knowledge of. And at that time, the audit threshold over here was about $350,000 at that time. The next piece of legislation will bump it up to $15 million.
Wow.
So you could see in one generation how an entire service line has been wiped out from many firms who have given up their audit registration certificates because there's no business out there for them anymore.
Mm.
And that was the start of a very seismic change that I saw in the accounting profession. So that exposed me over the years to, I think about 1,100, 1,200 at that time, firms, and you can't be in that many managing partners' offices and not see trends. After 14 years of doing that, being appointed to the board of that organization and serving as a director for 10 years, I left a very comfortable position, kind of momentary lapse of reason, as I think Pink Floyd says, and ended up on my own with my own business trying to really forward the work that has its genesis in what I was doing back there. So as we now stand, as you say, the exposure is global, and I am now trying to make the biggest contribution I can make to the profession, both from an accounting and bookkeeping standpoint, because there's an untapped potential, there's an unlimited amount of power in terms of the outcomes that these professionals, specifically accountants and bookkeepers, can create for their clients. I would like to be an accelerant in helping them make those types of impacts so that business owners like me can see our professional and personal aspirations achieved thanks to strong support. That's how it's all come together.
I'm going to ask you a question off script, because the way you said that made me think of a distinction between accountants and bookkeepers. Who would you say is actually closer to the business and or has the most influence in supporting the small businesses, or do you think it's, you know, one isn't more than the other?
That's a superb question. First of all, I had no reason, I had no idea we were on script to go off it. but the answer is depends. And what I mean by that is you will have a proactive and a reactive bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. You'll have a proactive and reactive accounting firm.
Yes.
So the proactive ones, whichever camp they are in, are going to be closer to the client. They're going to understand the client's needs. They're going to understand the client's challenges. They're going to understand what needs to happen. So it doesn't really matter what designation they have. It's about the inbuilt drive to base your income and your financial success on the outcomes created for the clients you serve.
Excellent answer. And of course, I totally agree. Proactivity is so important for everybody involved. So one question I would have for you then is, why do you think that accounting professionals, so that will take in bookkeepers and accountants, why do you think that we struggle so much to consistently bring in new clients? Because that's usually the number one thing everyone says they want. How do I get more clients? What's your take on it?
The take is that it's a cocktail. It's a cocktail that doesn't taste very nice. It comes from a mixture of our disposition. You know, people who are sales and marketing oriented typically find themselves going into sales and marketing of one kind or another. People who are technically minded find themselves going into process-driven roles. And the profession, whether we're talking about the bookkeeping or accounting profession, does very little to change that. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the training simply reinforces the disposition. And therefore, it is not in our nature or our training or in the opportunities we've been given to be proactive. Now, that's just a behavioral thing. That doesn't mean that we can't be. That doesn't mean we don't want to be. I mean, if I had a dollar for every accountant that said, I just want to help clients, Martin, I think I'd have upwards of $17 at this stage. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very important that we find as many of those as we can and unleash them and give them the confidence to say, you know what, technically, there may be very little to discern between you and the next firm. But emotional investment-wise, you are streets ahead, and that will be what we leverage to help you win new clients. So I think the history prevents us from being minded to win new clients. The training prevents us from having processes and systems we understand to winning new clients, and the lack of exposure means that we don't have the self-confidence, we don't win the first client ourselves in order to know why anyone would buy from us in the first place. And if we can't articulate it to ourselves, we're going to struggle to articulate it out there in the marketplace. So I'd say it's a cocktail of those three ingredients that you should pour down the sink at the first opportunity.
Yes, yes, I totally agree. You've nailed that. So you have a program that's about filling the sales pipeline. What does that mean, to fill the sales pipeline?
So for so many of us, we grow by referral. If we ask the audience listening today, how do you win clients, they say, well, walk-ins and referrals, that's word of mouth. This is typically how it works. And they will say that's how we always do it. And we always grow by about 5 or 10% each year on that basis, and we lose one or two, so net we're up. You know, and then I say, okay, what happens if the tap gets turned off? And they go, you know, and as a result of that, I'll say, okay, so imagine a client came to you and said, hey, I'm trying to grow my business. I am completely reliant on external factors for that to happen. And if people don't choose to work with me, I have no contingency plan. You're going to buy me? Let's invest. You know, and what will typically happen is, as an advisor, as a professional, you would know that there's alarm bells ringing in my head. Why haven't you got a backup? Why aren't you proactive about this? Why can't you forecast your income? Why don't you know what's coming in? Why don't you know when it's coming in? Why don't you know what size it is and its desirability when it comes in? So all of these questions are open. And therefore, building the pipeline, I find to be one of the initial building blocks in constructing a powerful practice, one that you're in control of, one that does far more than just deliver some technical services like everybody else does. Mm-hmm. So we build a pipeline and we use 7 avenues of exploration to find those sources of where new business can come from. Because for many firms or bookkeepers, they're sat on work and potential work that they haven't realized they're sat on. So before we do any marketing, we can actually bring stuff out from under the ground that they didn't know they were sat on in the first place. And when we have that mind fully, that's our starting point. We then look to proactive marketing to keep it filled up at the top. And we focus on forecasting. I have a little system for showing a probability of win, and therefore we forecast on those with the highest value that have the highest probability of converting at the lowest time scale elapsed for doing so, so the one we can win the quickest. And so we tend to reduce chargeable time employed on winning new work dramatically by bringing that process into play, and that's where building the pipeline all comes from.
Wow, that sounds amazing, because it does have a process, which we love, and it's efficient, and it puts us in control. I love it. So Martin, do you have any stories that you can think of off the top of your head, any clients that you've had that you went in and they were struggling because they were only getting clients by referral, and then you were able to work with them, filling the pipeline and showing them how to set up this kind of a system, and what results did they get?
I think that would apply to just about every case study that I could bring to bear. Mm-hmm. Because that is typically the case. I mean, a number of stories are now flicking into my mind. I'm going to pick one of them out.
Okay.
From here in the UK, where we had a three-partner firm who were, let's put it kindly, aging. Mm-hmm. And on that basis, they didn't have a new next-gen coming through. They had done things the same way for a long time. And critically, they didn't believe in themselves.
Mm.
Never mind have a plan of attack. So we couldn't build the pipeline. We had to win the first client. So again, that's a terminology meaning to convince ourselves that we have value to offer. So we had to create stories. And by creating stories, we went mining into their history, their client histories, and said, right, what was the biggest achievement we ever accomplished for a client? And bookkeepers can very, very, very comfortably do this. My bookkeeper could tell you stories, not ones I want you to hear, but they could tell you stories about how they've helped me and where they found me. And from my point of view, you know, I know something about my subject, but when I started, what did I know about running a business? What about the financial aspects of that? I'm not sure that much. And my bookkeeper has been my support and been my staff, as it were, been my handholder to take me through to a degree of financial competence. Again, people will dispute that one as well. But nevertheless, the business is now organized. I can now forecast with accuracy. Cash collection is not on my mind anymore. That gives me night sleeps back. That gives me a brighter aptitude in the morning and a countenance. That allows me to be more creative, which means I can write content, which means I can sell and what I do for a living and write new books and articles and so on. So the domino effect of what my bookkeeper does for me, for example, has ripples throughout the business in terms of my revenue streams, in terms of who I reach with what I have got to say. But that's got absolutely nothing to do with a three-partner firm across the road here. So let's go back to them. And what was going on with them is because they didn't have that inbuilt, I know why you should work with us, answer to question. That's where we had to start. And so we had three very different personalities. One who I believe could completely do it, but they didn't believe it themselves. One who absolutely believed they could do it, but they were wrong. And one who had absolutely no intention of doing anything at all, if at all possible. So we had three different dynamics there, and we started with the one who thought they could do it and was wrong, and that was proven to be the case. So we built a pipeline, we tried to increase the number of stories they could tell, and they found it to be very, very tough because the process was now not employed.
Mm-hmm.
The one who I thought could do it, but they didn't think they could do it, then said, I'll tell you what, then I'll combine this process with that other guy's charisma, and let's see if that works. And of course, they were successful. And what's fascinating now is the one who had nothing, wanted nothing to do with any of it said, now I want a slice of the action. now there is this kind of positivity by osmosis effect going on where I said, oh, actually, all of a sudden, we're good.
Hmm.
All of a sudden, we can charge more than we've charged previously. All of a sudden, we can paint what we do in a different light so that it has far more resonance with the potential clients we go and see. And now we can forecast it all. Now we know how many we need. Now it becomes a numbers game. If 4 appointments, that means 2 second meetings, which means 1 to 2 proposals, which means 1 new client, which at an average fee of $8,000 or $5,000 or $1,000, means that we get X minute and it all becomes probability.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore we play with the variables to make sure that our probability is as strong as it could possibly be, all coming from believing from the client. Now that's a firm in Sheffield, Yorkshire here in the UK. And of course they are now into 6 figures, but that's not a big deal. I would normally expect to see 6 figures of growth coming from that small sort of approach. 7 figures impresses me. I kind of like 7 figures when that happens, but 6 is the norm. So that's what they've seen. And of course with each of these wins, they have a story now to tell, and they can bring more and more to bear, which affects what their website looks like, which affects how their staff feel about working there, which affects the profitability that they see, which affects what they can do with salary increases and their own lifestyle goals.
Upward spiral.
I think it might be a spiral. I should call a business that. Anyway.
I think you should.
I think I should. It's registry after this call is done. And I picked that example because it's representative of whether we're talking about bookkeeping or accounting. It's representative of the light bulb going on. Okay, there's going to come a time when we watch this and somebody's going to say, "What are light bulbs?" But a light bulb going on and going, "Oh, I get it. I'm actually of worth to a client. I'm not necessarily evil. Oh, I get it. More people need my help. Oh, I get it. They're not getting help from where they currently are." Another big faux pas. All our services are the same. No, they're not. I can be more. Oh, there is a way of reaching them. Oh, they don't think I'm salesy. Oh, I can quote that price. And it just goes on from there.
Yeah.
And everybody who is listening to this needs to hear that they have that at their disposal if they will just tap into it.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, Martin. I really think you have nailed it. So what would you say is the biggest mistake? We saw like where they were getting stuck, but what would you say is the biggest mistake that most accounting firms or accounting professionals make?
There are nine.
There are nine of them. Just number four, one. Give us number one.
Four nine flavors. May I pick two?
Okay, you can have two.
Thank you. Thank you. So the two that I see most commonly, this is why I asked for two, because I see them repeated over and over and over and over and over again, and they're linked to each other. One is to not get the second meeting whilst in the first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have a great meeting, rapport and empathy will be created, there's a reason to talk further, and our courage deserts us, and we say something along the lines of, well, there's my card, and give me a call, and I will answer it. You know, and we just don't want to go forward because, oh, that would be pushy.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's the very reason you were having the conversation. The very reason people like us have given you the time of day in the first place is so we'll have another meeting so you can show me what the way forward is. I'm waiting for you to invite me to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to get a second meeting whilst in the first. And the reason it's whilst in the first is because that will strike while the iron's hot and we don't let other things get in the way. If you give me a week after that meeting, I'll have forgotten your first name.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I don't like you, not because you weren't important to me, but because I'm running a business here and I am crammed with things I've got to do. So the impact of it will have died off, it will have cooled off at that stage. So we get a second meeting whilst in the first. That's the most important thing I would say. And we miss that chance and we miss business that way.
So really, just so that they can have something actionable from this, the simple step of when you speak to a prospective client, you should always end it with setting a date for the next step. Correct?
I would say so. And the next step is not a call, it's not an email, it isn't a Skype, it's an in-person meeting.
Okay. That's what it's got. How does that work for a virtual bookkeeper?
For a virtual bookkeeper, it then becomes a face-to-face.
Okay.
So that may well be a Skype or a GoTo meeting or a Zoom or whatever platform you happen to use. The point being it's face-to-face.
Right.
And that we're not reliant on them coming back to us about something once they've seen something or a call has to be returned or whatever it may be. It's a conversation where they can see the whites of your eyes, you can see the whites of theirs, and there is we can read the body language, we can hear the context and tone of what we're putting across is to do that. So, for example, how we would do that, if I be the potential bookkeeper,
mm-hmm.
okay, Gabrielle, if you could be Gabrielle, that'd be great.
I'll try.
I'll give you a moment to get into character there before I start.
Okay.
And so the way I would play that would be to say, well, so Gabrielle, first of all, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to having really opened up about the business to me and given me an idea of where the support is needed. I've got to tell you at this stage, given our track record in the practice, we are very, very confident of being able to assist you. And what I'd like to do now is to go away and think about this and to come across with what I believe is the most appropriate solution with an investment level that is going to work for you. And what we need to do is to really get everyone who's involved in the decision-making process around the table. Can I ask, who is involved in the decision-making process?
Well, in this case, it's me. So
So if all the decisions solely rest on your desk, Gabriel, so be it. Then let's you and I get together. I will need about a week to come up with something that I'm comfortable with, that I'm proud to present to you. But it's Friday today, so that's a week from now. That takes the next Friday. So looking at the week beyond that, would Tuesday or Wednesday be more appropriate for you?
Tuesday.
Tuesday's a better one?
Yes.
And do we prefer an early morning start? Do we wait till the day's over? What's the preference there?
Afternoon. Anytime after 3 o'clock works for me.
Okay. Well, if it's okay with you, what I will do is I'll go down to work on this proposal. I'll drop you a line as to what we've talked about so far, and I'll come and revisit this with you with a formal proposal on the solutions I think we should take forward here for you, Gabrielle, next Tuesday at 3:30 p.m. And then you can help me shape what the proposition actually ends up being, and we can find out where we go from here, one way or the other. Would that be okay?
That would be great. I would love that. Thank you.
That's what we'll do. And of course, I'll confirm everything in writing in the meantime. I'm now as a character. And so that is a simple process that if you have created that residence in the meeting, they don't back off on that. Mm-hmm. They might back off on dates and say, I'm going on holiday next week. Or I'm going in for an operation, I haven't decided which one, I'm going to pick one when I get there. You know, there might be a reason for them not being able to do next week, so we mustn't wobble at that point. We must say, okay, fine, let's look at the week beyond that, yes. And not, well, come back to me when you're free. That's where the mistake occurs. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's look beyond the week that, or I'm going on holiday for 2 weeks and I'm going to have a huge amount of work when I get back. How long does it take to clear a backlog? About another week. Okay, mm-hmm. It's 4 weeks today, let's go. Yeah. You know, so whatever it is, we don't lose control of that part. So that's mistake number one that we must avoid. Mistake number two is very linked to it, and that's this proposal that I'm talking about. Not a quote, a proposal that comes back with you in person. Mm-hmm. This is the masterwork.
Yep.
Okay? This is Tolkien's finest that we've got here. This is the solution to all their problems. It is very valuable stuff. Therefore, we do not email and mm-hmm. cheapen it. Because mm-hmm. if we email it, what's the very first thing they're going to look at?
Price. It's
price. Mm-hmm. They're going to look at the price, they're not going to look at the justification for the price, and if it's anything above what they're currently paying, you've got a good 60-70% chance of that second meeting getting cancelled. Okay, so we have to put a narrative by it. How our thinking came about, what happens to them if they invest in this, how it can be broken down into manageable chunks, and that's the process that we typically miss as professionals because we've never been exposed to it.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And I learned this very recently because I used to always do that too. I would send off the proposal by email and then you have to wait. There's no deadline. And a lot of times it just dies on the vine.
It does die on the vine. And then we go, hi, is Gabrielle there? No? Okay. Martin called. Can she give you a call back? Thanks.
Don't pick up the phone. Send an email.
Right.
Follow up.
Yeah, we'll send an
You're
email.
Kidding, we're introverts here.
Of course, yes, I forget. Sorry, so throw that out the window and then write an email. You know, mm-hmm. and then it's like, well, am I being too pushy now? I hate being
right.
pushy.
But what I loved what you did in that role play, I mean, being on the receiving end, I could feel it. It's not salesy at all. It is service. You're there taking care of me. And clients love that. I would love any of my service providers to be like that. It really is attractive. So I can see that it really builds the relationship at that point. I mean, it's making the potential client really want to work with you because others don't do that.
Others do not do that. Mm-hmm. And the Japanese say to serve is glorious. Hmm. They say other things, of course, not just that, but they say to serve is glorious. Mm-hmm. The inferred message here is that I'm here as a professional, Gabrielle, to help you solve what you're telling me is getting in your way. Will you facilitate that for me by allowing me to come back to show you how me, the professional with the track record who can do this, can do it for you?
That's right.
That's not a sales proposition. That's a problem-solving situation.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And it feels that way to the client, too.
Which is a critical, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, that what we're talking about, this is almost like the sales process. But always bookkeepers will say, well, I need new clients, so I need to do more marketing. It sounds like there's a lot of overlap, but difference. What would you say is the difference between marketing and sales, or business development, as it's called?
Of course, we call it business development because nobody wants to say sales.
Mm.
So let's develop some business. Let's facilitate opportunity, you know, because we don't want to say sales. It's all sales, because we're a capitalist nation looking to make some money out of what we do for a living. So it is sales. And marketing is quite simple. Marketing is any activity that creates an opportunity. Any communication that creates an opportunity is marketing. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't create an opportunity, it's exceptionally poor marketing.
Mm-hmm.
We talk so much about brand awareness and profile raising. Well, raise your profile as high as you want. If nobody's coming to talk to you, what's the point of that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's to create an opportunity. Business development, or whatever name we want to give it, to hide the fact that it's sales, is the closing of that opportunity, turning the opportunity into money, and a relationship, more importantly, again. So that's the main two differences. But of course, the question of, I need to do more marketing, can often come about because we didn't close the last set of marketing particularly well. The reason we need to do more marketing is because we wasted what we did last time. We didn't follow up from the event, we emailed the proposal, we didn't get the meetings in the diary, whatever it was. So if marketing is not putting meetings in diaries, it's failing. And that includes Skype calls. If business development is not putting dollar notes in the bank account, it's failing. And that's the ultimate measure of those two disciplines.
I love it. Results-based. That's good.
Very much so.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. So if you could share just one powerful technique or tip right away, what would it be?
Well, I would say a number of things. I would ask you to, I would ask everyone who is watching or listening to look at their diary.
And ask themselves, AKA your calendar.
Calendar, diary, the thing that's on the phone or on the wall planner or wherever it happens to be that tells you what you're doing tomorrow, that thing. Mm-hmm. And to say, right, it is the, as we record this, it's the 10th of June. Where's the money coming from this month? You know, okay, I've got recurring fees up to the extent of X, okay, and if any one of those drops out, I've got a problem. How am I replacing that? And that would be the question that the bank manager would ask. That's the question an investor would ask. It's, all right, what happens if we lose a client? Where's the money coming from? Now, for most of us, we will go, don't have an answer to that question. That's typically the starting point, is to say, okay, where's the money coming from this month? We typically won't know. So that should lead to the next question of how do I get appointments in my diary? And that leads to the next question of, right, what do I need to do to get some interest? Do I need to speak to existing clients for referrals? For example, do I need to bring more value to my existing clients on a cross-selling basis? Do I need to go to new business? What do I need to do? And the one tip I would say to start with all of that is to ask one question, where's the money coming from?
And how often would you say we should be asking that? Every week? Every month? How often?
Well, it's typically tied into a pipeline process of having a pipeline, because that's the normal answer to the question, where's the money coming from? The pipeline will tell us what we've got coming through, or at least potentially coming through. And speaking from a personal point of view, I review my pipeline every 2 days, but I would do that because the nature of the beast that I am. As we're starting point, I'd say a minimum of every 2 weeks, what we'd say in the UK is fortnightly. Every 2 weeks, and then from there make it weekly, and from there make it as often as you can, because it's fluid, it needs to change, and if your prospects that are in the pipeline today were in there 3 months ago, we've got a problem. You know, it's a constant turnaround and flow. The pipeline doesn't have water sat in it, the water sat in it will go stale. It pushes the liquid through because the flow is coming through and replaces it with new stuff to the extent that we can accept it. And so for the bookkeepers, we might only be able to accept one new client a month. That might be all we can do. And if that's all we can do, then that's it, right? One new client a month is going to require two proposals. Two proposals are going to require four first meetings. Where am I getting four first meetings from?
And that's the marketing part, yeah.
Work it backwards from there. So the tip would be, ask the question regularly, where's the money coming from, to snap you into action to thinking away from the technical role that you perform for clients through to the running of the business role, the commercially mature role of, I need to have a process, a system that works for me here. That means I don't have to think about that so often because there is new stuff coming down the pipe.
That's right. So it means making time to work on your business and not just in it.
It does indeed, yes. And the only way that's going to happen is to schedule it. And I share there that if we have a pet, you know, if we have a dog or a cat, or an antelope, whatever it is we've got, you know, and we are working all day long, we do not allow the pet to go hungry. We do not allow the dog not to be walked. You know, we find a way. It's a high enough priority for us to find a way. If we get a dog walker or a dog sitter, or we go home at lunchtime, or we have the key to a neighbor to come into, we don't let dogs starve because we love the dog. And the dog is a high priority for us. So even though we don't have time for the dog, nevertheless, the dog, we make sure the dog's looked after. Similarly, why wouldn't our business be that important to us? And I hear professionals say to me all the time, Martin, I can't grow the firm. I've just got no time. We'll make something. Because all that's telling me is it's not important enough to you. And if you've got half an hour to watch Netflix, You've got half an hour to build the practice. Simple as that. And after your system is set up, half an hour should be all it needs to keep the plate spinning on the sticks. You know, that should be all it needs to keep it moving. It's just a question of priority. And so scheduling it will make it happen.
Love it. Love it. That is so good. Well, Martin, do you have any final pearls of wisdom for us as we wrap this up?
I don't think I've ever had a pearl of wisdom, but I think what I would say is my father failed in business because he was not supported. And that's no failing of the professionals, I hasten to add. It just wasn't the culture at that time. As a business owner, myself, I know what it is to struggle by myself, and I know what it is to have the support of a great accountant and bookkeeper, in my case. I know what it is to have them on my side fighting my corner. From an economic point of view, I put a premium on that, and I will happily budget a larger figure than a compliance-only provider will get from me because of the perceived value I have of them being emotionally invested in my business. Mm-hmm. For everybody who watches or listens to this, I'd ask them to go and look at their career history, and if they're brand new, that's fine, no problem at all. And let's go ambition instead. Let's just aim for ambition. And if you've been around for a while, what's the greatest achievement or accomplishment you made for the clients? If you're brand new, what's the greatest achievement or accomplishment you want to make for those clients? Because that old hackneyed term of most trusted advisor is old and hackneyed for a reason. Mm. It's correct. Mm. And then it's often repeated, and therefore it becomes hackneyed and cliche. Okay, but it's there for a reason. We, the business owner speaking as one, will turn to you, the people watching this. We don't have the answers, you have the answers. We don't have it all together ourselves, we need you to believe in us. We need our hands holding, you've got a hand, it's a particularly good one, let's hold it. And so on and so on and so on. And so, yes, let's look at making money by winning new clients, absolutely. But let's have that money be a consequence of the gloriousness of serving a business owner in achieving what they set out to do. I don't know that there's a professional aspiration that tops that one, and that would be the pearl of wisdom if there's any to give.
And it is a highly valuable pearl of wisdom. Thank you so much, Martin. So appreciate what you shared with us today. I would like to do more with you, so we'll have to talk about that. And if anybody watching this wants to get a hold of you, reach out to you, where should they go? What should they do?
Okay, so the starting point, generally speaking, is martinbissett.com, where there will be a welcome there. Everything will be very self-explanatory, and there's lots of ways to engage that don't cost any money at all. Mm-hmm. And I'd be very delighted to hear from anybody who would like to know more, because, of course, just as I've asked everyone to go and share what they can do to impact business owners, that is exactly my motivation. I'm looking to share what I have learned with you guys. So come along and have a look at the site and engage at whatever level you're comfortable with.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you, Martin. And we'll make sure to put that on the blog post as well. So the link should be below this video. So thank you again, Martin. And I can't wait for us to do something more because we are so aligned in what we're doing. And I know that together, all of us, bookkeepers, accountants, those of us who support them, can make a big difference. So talk to you again soon, I hope.
Thank you very much indeed, Gabriel. Thank you.